Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us. We're going to have a lot of fun this evening with my guest, Lon Milo Duquette, who, for those of you who have ever heard his name, is one of the authorities in the occult mysticism, magic with a K, and all manner of things like that. But he's also a humorist and a singer-songwriter, so we're going to have fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing, which hopefully also will be fun. As some of you may have noticed, I like puns. And a lot of people don't like puns. I love puns. I love double meanings. I love double entendres. I like visual puns. I like witty banter. I like all of that stuff. Now, when people ask me why, I say because it's my spiritual practice. And you know, I usually get pretty strange looks for that, but spiritual practice is whatever helps you understand your connection with spirit, divinity, whatever he, she, it, they are. So as far as I can tell, the universe, God, divinity, is a punster. There are multiple levels of meaning to everything. So if you spend your life looking at and being amused by multiple levels of meaning, you start catching the edge of all this stuff that other people miss. So how does that show up, and how did I wind up thinking this way? Many years ago, I was apprenticing with two shamans and working nights in a psych hospital. And, you know, I'm doing all these activities and spiritual practices, and my teachers are saying, well, try this and try that and do this and do that and tell me what your experience is. And, you know, in my frustration, I would just very emotionally, which is one of the keys to manifesting anything, is to be very emotional about it and very clear about it, would just burst out with something in frustration. So one day I said, just give me a sign. I'm confused. I'm struggling. I don't know what to do next. Give me a sign. So the next day I got a sign painting job. And I'm like, okay, that was funny. Got it. Be clear. There are multiple meanings. Probably my favorite one was the day that I woke up and I was just frustrated with everything and I was flailing around and like, I don't want to do this anymore. Just, I want to be surrounded by beautiful, adoring redheads. And, you know, I went about my day, didn't think anything about that. And that afternoon, I was a substitute teacher at an early childhood place. And when I was completely surrounded by this family of young redheaded boys who were wrestling with me, having a ball, I realized that they got me again. I was surrounded by adoring redheads. I had not mentioned the gender or the reason that I wanted the redheads or the age that I would prefer. So they just gave me adoring redheads. I said, pay attention, pay attention. You're not asking clearly. And that's how serendipity works. That's how what appear to be coincidences work. And that's why things turn out really strangely, because the universe will give you some version of what you said, but not necessarily what you meant unless you're really clear in what you actually meant. So I hope some of you are giggling in the background, because I certainly have been giggling in the background about all the stuff that's happened to me over the years. And I heard giggling in the background our guest for this evening. So that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's go right to introducing my guest, Lon Milo Duquette, who is one of the authorities in all of the occult realm. And I'm very excited to have him on the show. Are you with us, Lon?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. And thank you so much for being on the show. I was introduced to Lon by my good friend, Frank, who had talked to Lon a couple of times, and he pointed me to one of Lon's many, many books, but this was The Chicken Kabbalah of, Rabbi Lamed Ben,
Clifford.
Lamed Ben Clifford. And it's a wonderful book on Kabbalah with lots of very interesting information that I laughed through. There's one chapter I read just because it's so funny. And that was my introduction to this man's profound knowledge, but also his sense of humor. And when I look to see whether somebody feels like they're a master, the first thing I look for is the twinkle in the eyes and the impish grin that says, "I know something you don't know." It's pretty funny.
It's really funny.
And every guru, every master, every medicine man, everybody that I've ever run into who really knows what's going on has that going on. The people that are serious haven't figured it out. So what I ask all my guests, Lon, is how did you wind up doing this and what was your path? I mean, you've been doing this a long time.
Well, I do this because I got into this because I've been trying to avoid doing an honest day's work my whole life. I work so hard at not having a job that I worked myself into this little niche. I'm only half joking, maybe not even half joking about that. I'm 64 years old. I'll be 65 in July. And, so I sort of came of age in the psychedelic 60s. And, I went to college starting in 1966 in Orange County, California. And that was right in the middle of some very, very exciting cultural and spiritual movements. And I just dove in with both feet. I really just went to college to attend the 60s. That was my major. And after my first psychedelic experience, I really, up until then, like in high school, I was fancied myself a free thinker and an agnostic and progressive, politically. And I was active in the anti-war movement and because the Vietnam War was escalating terribly at the time. But when I looked at my face in the mirror about 20 minutes after I dropped my first LSD, I realized that the human mind and spirit and soul was something far, far greater than I could have possibly imagined. From that point on, literally, I determined that self examination and mind expansion and illumination was the only thing in life really worth pursuing seriously. And so I set to work doing just that. And the psychedelics made way for meditation and yoga and Eastern mysticism. And that made way for my interest in the Western spiritual tradition, which esoterically included the Hebrew Kabbalah and eventually ceremonial magic. And so that's sort of what got me into all of this. And one morning in 1988, I got a phone call from Christopher Hyatt, who already had a best-selling book called Undoing Yourself. And he said he was writing a book about sort of the psychological aspects. He was a psychologist. The psychological aspects of tarot, but he didn't know that much about tarot, and he knew that I was into that that stuff, Kabbalah and the tarot. And he made me an offer that I couldn't refuse, really. He said, would you help me write this book, and I'll give you, we'll split the author's credit, and we'll split the royalties, and as we're writing it, I'll pay you $1,200 a month.
That's quite a deal.
That I tell that to other writers, and they go, "Oh, you."
Is $1,200 back then was living lavishly.
Well, I don't know if it was lavish, but it paid your rent. And so I did that, and it was a wonderful experience. And he really taught me the discipline of writing, and we knocked off. We enjoyed writing together and collaborating, and we ended up doing publishing 4 books in 2 years.
Mm.
And that sort of got me onto the career of writing. And but I told him right at first, you know, I don't write, you know, what makes you think that I'm an authority on this stuff? And he asked me something that I hadn't stopped to think about, and he said, "Well, who is that's alive?"
Right.
And so I kind of realized back in '88 that most people that knew this particular kind of magical, Kabbalistic, and esoteric connection with the tarot cards. Most of the people at the time were dead, and I just not that I knew that much. It's just the folks that knew more weren't with us anymore, and so it's and I guess that's been the key to my career. I just keep outliving people.
Well, yeah, there certainly was a prior generation that was in touch with a lot of different things. For me, I caught the edge of the Theosophical Society old guard.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And again, all of those folks that were the core of that group are gone. I don't know whether there's another generation behind them. I haven't been in touch with them.
Well, I was the same way with the Thelemic and the Aleister Crowley folks. I was lucky enough, really privileged to be initiated into that particular magical discipline by Phyllis Seckler and Grady McMurtry. And to a lesser extent, Helen Parson Smith, all of whom were contemporaries of Crowley, and Grady was initiated by Crowley, studied with Crowley in England during World War II, and the other two ladies corresponded with Crowley. Their Agape Lodge, all of them old Agape Lodge members from Pasadena, and so I got initiated into the Ordo Templi Orientis, in a very private kind of way. There wasn't an organization. The organization was down to like 4 or 5 old folks left over, and they started initiating again in the 70s, and I got in a garage. I was in a garage temple in Dublin, California.
Yeah.
These dear souls put me through a beautiful initiation ceremony, and the OTO has been my my spiritual home ever since then.
Well, I want to hear more about OTO and Aleister Crowley, but I want to remind our listeners that we're here with Lon Milo Duquette, who is an authority on the occult and mysticism and all kinds of other stuff. And if you would like to ask either Lon Milo or myself a question or make a comment, and you have a Twitter account, please tweet to @FarkasFiles, cleverly enough, and use the hashtag FarkasFiles, and it will pop up on my screen, and we can communicate with you directly while we're talking on the show. How cool is that? So give us a little bit more of an idea of what OTO it was and is, and who Crowley was, because that name has been in the background. I've heard him, heard his name and, you know, general connections to things, but I don't really know who he is.
Oh, well, Aleister Crowley, I'll give you the age spread. He was born in 1875 and wow. died in 1947.
Mm-hmm.
And he was primarily a poet and a writer. He was an Englishman, but he spent some years in the United States. He wrote for some pretty just normal periodicals. He wrote for Vanity Fair and a few other things. But he wrote some pretty esoteric and eventually controversial poetry. He got some pretty good reviews, especially at first. He was very prolific as a poet. And but he was really edgy. So his poetry was pretty sexy and pretty nowadays they wouldn't think anything of it, but when he was publishing, like in the as a young man in the late 1800s, it was pretty wild stuff. And and he was a pretty wild guy too, and he was born probably about 60 years ahead of his time is what is the only problem. But he was very sexually liberated guy. He was bisexual at a time when you could still get thrown in jail for even talking about that stuff. And of course he had a terrible reputation in the late Victorian and Edwardian England, and he eventually became very interested in ceremonial magic, and he was initiated into the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and I believe it was in 1898, I think that's when he joined. And the Golden Dawn was mostly an English magical society, and some pretty cool famous people and influential people were members of the Golden Dawn. And the Golden Dawn was a hermetic initiatory magical society that that taught in a very structured and systematic way the ceremonial magic, or in other words, Kabbalistic-based form of exercises and disciplines designed to systematically raise the consciousness of the initiate. So in a way, it was sort of like the Western version of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Only it wasn't internalized yoga. It was externalized magic. You strutted mm-hmm. around a room and wore cool clothes and all of that stuff. And Crowley just resonated really well with that because it was just the type of dramatic spirituality that that he was just keen to do. And he was he advanced really fast in the Golden Dawn. And eventually his personality was such that he had a falling out with the leadership. And then in 1904, while honeymooning in Cairo, he had what he would later describe as a life-changing spiritual experience in Cairo, and where he was where he realized, at least in his own mind, he made contact with a greater human intelligence, and you can interpret that any way you want, I suppose. But he came to the conclusion, on a very deep spiritual level, that the age, human consciousness as a whole, had made a shift, a step up in evolution. And that we had entered into a new age, and the age that was more or less foretold by the first century Kabbalists and Christians. He said it's happened. It's happened. The old age is dead. The new age has begun, and this new age is characterized by a very simple realization among humanity as a whole, and the realization is that the sun stays on all the time. I mean, it sounds very simple, you know, but up until then, humanity was based, and religious formula was based, even political structures were based fundamentally, believe it or not, on the assumption that the sun died and had to be mysteriously, miraculously reborn every day. So the idea that God died and had to be reborn just colored all of our thinking, all of our science, all of our religion. And you know, the myth of Osiris and the myth of Christianity, where our God needed to die and come you know, magically back to life, was based on a false assumption. And and enough people by 1904, I guess, really had it hardwired in our psyches that the sun stays on all the time. So if the sun stays on all the time, actually we stay on all the time. And this idea of immortality is not based on something that happens after we die, but the fact that that immortality is really a matter of learning to attain the consciousness of the continuity of your own existence.
Right.
And it's pretty neat stuff. Okay. Yeah. It really is pretty neat stuff.
A few
people, literally just a handful of people, almost instantly got what Crowley was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else just misunderstood it as far as you could misunderstand it.
Right.
And of course thought it was blasphemous and evil and you know, anti-Christian and anti-God, well, and anti-Bible.
Well, we're getting to the juicy part, but we're going to have to go to the break. So hang on to the thought, and we're going to go to the break, and then we will come back and continue with a fascinating history of all of this stuff. So I'm here with Lon Milo Duquette on the Farkas Files, and we will be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go nowhere. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We're retired, and this is how we live United.
We decided to volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too. We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic. We don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? I'm Andrew Hoffman. I invented the lost cat magnet. Just turn it on and lost cats stick to it. Just listen to one satisfied cat. That's proof. You should invent stuff too. But remember, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Look, up in the sky.
It's just a leaf.
It's the Smartway leaf. The Smartway leaf tells you what cars and trucks are certified as better for the environment.
A talking leaf?
No, it's a logo leaf. You know, leaf, the environment.
Why not an acorn? It says environment, you can squirrel away acorns.
Well, the leaf works better with a tagline. America is turning over a new leaf for the environment. Smartway leaves will be raining down all over the country.
Yeah, you wouldn't want acorns raining down on people's heads. That would hurt.
Go to www.epa.gov/smartway.
I like the leaf.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Lon Milo Duquette, one of the few authorities on ceremonial magic, telling us how he got here, how he got through all of this.
Oh, there's lots of authorities on ceremonial magic. Just ask any magician. They'll tell you they're an authority on.
Well, in your, you know, it's like so many other things. In your world, in the world of magic, you know all these people. It's like people... you know, say my work doing clearings on buildings and people remotely is really strange. And I go, well, yeah, but I know people all over the world that do this, and we
sure.
communicate with each other, and we have subspecialties.
have conventions.
Right. Well, not exactly, but we you know, pick each other's brains, and why isn't this working? So, you know, yeah, you're in the middle of it, so you know everybody, but most people don't.
Well, but anyway, so, where were we?
You were telling us about Crowley and the unfolding of that whole thing.
Well, because we were trying to get to the OTO with
right.
Anyway, Crowley went to work. He was more or less the most militant and very motivated student of magic, and he sort of grasped the big picture of all of this stuff right away. He eventually ended up starting his own. Magical society that was kind of based on the structure of the Golden Dawn, but instead of the degrees being symbolic of levels of consciousness, Crowley said, well, when you reach those levels of consciousness, you are that degree, and there's
right.
let's just not pretend. Well, when you're that, you're that. And here's how think that here's some exercises and stuff to get you to these various levels, and when you are those levels, here's some landmarks of your meditative and spiritual proofs to yourself that you are
right.
those things, and it's just a personal thing. It's not a, you know, nobody can bestow this stuff on you or anything else. It's a purely personal thing. But and here's yeah. how to set to work. You can have people that guide you. You can have teachers and stuff, but none of them can do the work for you. And So eventually, around 1912, he runs into a guy named Theodore Royce, who's the head of an organization, kind of a Masonic organization in Germany. And Royce got mad at him for publishing the big secret of this organization. And Crowley said, "I don't even know the secret of your organization. How could I publish it?" And the guy pulls out a book that Crowley had written, and he says, "There, right there on plain line." And Crowley says, "What do you mean by that?" And the guy had to explain it to him. Well, what it came down to was supposedly a technique of sexual magic. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the particular technique was something that one man magician and one woman magician did together. But the theory underlying what they did it transcends human sexuality and goes in a absolutely quantum level into more universal magical theory. And when the light bulb went off in Crowley's head, he saw this particular magic as being the key to absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. In the manifest and unmanifest universe. He got it. He got it big time. And so much so that these two guys had a wonderful conversation, and this guy said, "Look, you can translate our rituals, rewrite our rituals, and you can have this organization first starting off in the English-speaking countries." And eventually, at Royce's death, Crowley took over leadership internationally. And so Crowley took an existing magical order that was pretty much mainstream continental Freemasonry, but had this one super secret thing, technique, okay, that you had to be the highest of the highest degree of this to do, and he made it his own, and so that is Ordo Templi Orientis. Mm-hmm. And when I joined, that the order had almost gone extinct, and the guy that took that headed it after Crowley's death, Carl Germer, was a marvelous man and a dear soul, but he chose not to initiate anymore, and he focused on publishing. But when he died in the late 60s, the few remaining old members eventually got together and said, "Let's start initiating again."
Mm-hmm. So you started the process up again. Right.
So I was one of the youngsters that first, with trembling knees, because I didn't know whether I was going to get raped and eaten. You know, I had no idea if all of the terrible rumors I heard about Crowley were true or anything else. I just said, "You know, this guy is so brilliant that I'm going to take the chance." And I'm so glad I did.
Exciting, exciting thing to plug into. Hey, we actually got a question over Twitter, which might fit right into where we are in the story. This is from Bazork, which is a great Twitter handle. And he asks, "Can you share a non-duality experience from your occult adventures?"
Yeah, sure. There's this idea called the Holy Guardian Angel. Crowley didn't start this idea. in yoga, it's comparable to the opening of a complete opening of the heart chakra. And in Christian mysticism, it's called Christ consciousness. And it's a landmark level of consciousness that everybody, all of us, whether you know it or not, whether it's in this lifetime or a next or a next or a next, we're all going to experience this. This is part of our return to Godhead. But it's a level of consciousness that is at least metaphorically described as meeting your own personal holy guardian angel and then mating with it.
Mm.
And it is such an ecstatic experience, you know, when you read about it, that it, in the ecstasy of this experience, all sense of separateness with you and anything else in the universe disappears. Mm. It is literally samadhi. And ecstatic samadhi, where you literally become wall-to-wall being. And I experienced a glimpse of this back in 1967 in Oregon, just accidentally during meditation. I was listening to the Beatles, All You Need Is Love, okay? And this is, we were hippies up in Oregon, and we hadn't had any marijuana in 6 months. Okay, I wasn't drunk. I wasn't on drugs or anything. This was on the natch. And I got such an ecstatic thrill when it finally dawned on me that when they said all you need is love, they really meant all you need is love. And it was like somebody broke an electric egg on the top of my head, and that egg just, that electricity just dripped down the top of my head, down the back of my spine. Usually you think about the kundalini as something that rising
from the bottom. Yeah.
This started at the top and moved down, and as it moved down, every area of my body that it took over became the entire universe.
Wow.
And I just, as it was happening, I thought, oh, this is crazy. But something in me said, just surrender to this. This is the best thing that's ever happened to you, kid. Yeah, surrender to it. And the more I surrendered, the more beautiful and profound it was, and the more it moved down and out of my down the extremities of my arms and out of my fingertips, and they all disappeared. I don't know where my lips began and the ends of the universe ended. It was absolutely glorious. And I was literally wall to wall. But there wasn't even an I for me to think I am wall to wall. Okay. I disappeared.
Right.
And, but something deep down, way, way, way far away in some dark corner of the universe where the old me was still sitting in Oregon, figured out that I was probably going to die like this, and this was death. And another part of me, a little bit higher, said, you should be so lucky to die like this, you know. And so it was a coin flip over whether I just wanted to do this or not, but something else was going on. And I didn't even know where to find myself. I was so everywhere.
Yeah.
But I finally found an arm, and I moved the arm, and the arm came back. The arm literally fell out of paradise. And then the other arm fell out of paradise, you know. Right. And I eventually, step by step, lost that wonderful sense of infinity.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized that I hadn't been breathing for a long time.
Oops.
And I took it finally. When I finally had lungs again, I took a deep breath, and it really stunk. And my first thought was, oh, the material world is so stinky. It smells like cat shit. And then I realized it was cat shit. Because when I was having this wonderful experience, our cat had shit on my boots.
So welcome back to the physical world.
Yeah. So that was my first glimpse of it. And you know, I've tried everything in the world, all of my magic tricks and all my disciplines, and tried to get that back. But something, the next step, if you can imagine a next step of that, as far as realization and experience, happened just a year ago, last April, in New York City. I was alone in New York City, and I had a similar experience, but I could process that as an understanding of the fact that that all of this power, it's going to sound like a cliche, and I don't care. It is a cliche, but right. It's true. The whole thing, the whole ball of wax, this whole consciousness thing, the universe, God, if you want to call it, is love. Love is an energy as much as electricity or nuclear energy, or it's a force. And it's not just a force that you learn how to give. You have to be able to receive it with the same intensity as you give it. It's an alternating current. And all of the disciplines, the yogic disciplines, the magical disciplines, all they do is to serve to block or to unblock all of the occlusions that you have to either giving or receiving love in an unblocked current.
Right.
And when you've got your finger stuck in the light socket of that current, okay, you have your non-dual experience. I hope that answered the question there.
Well, we'll see if we get a response back from Bjork. But that's a fantastic story, and it's fascinating to me how many years passed between the two experiences, and it's often like that.
The thing is, time doesn't exist.
Right.
Period.
Right.
When I was having the experience in New York, I realized this is just part of me sitting in Oregon.
Right. Right. It's just where you put your consciousness.
Yeah.
So the stories are great. Obviously, we could keep talking forever, but tell people what you're up to these days and where they can find you, what your website is. How do people get in touch, and what are you doing?
I'm having my fifth midlife crisis.
Excellent. You're ahead of me.
For some reason, in the past couple of years, I've picked up the guitar again. I don't know if we discussed that I was a recording artist back in the 70s. But I picked up the guitar again, and it seemed like it was time after 25 years to start writing songs again. And I have, and I've been lucky enough to get a record label, and I've been super lucky to get some pretty good gigs around the country and around the world. And so I'm busy being an aged folk rock songwriter philosopher, and every place I go to speak or do magic related things, I'm also playing at night in some club or show or something too. So I'm doing that. I've got a couple CDs out. You can look me up on CD Baby is the best place to buy it if you want me to get any money for it. But I'm on iTunes and Amazon and or you can go directly to the label. But it's just my first CD is called I'm Baba Lawn.
I love that.
And the next one's called Baba Lawn 2. And so you can look that up. I have a Reverb Nation page that has all of my musical stuff. And I mostly work out of my Facebook page. My personal page has hit its limit of friends, but I've got a Lon Duquette fan page, and that's where most of this stuff, my daily or my where I'm appearing and things, you'll find that on my Facebook fan page. And I've got other pages, that's really the freshest one. And so, you can get any of my books. I think if you just go to Amazon, and I have three major publishers, but all of my titles are on are still in print and on Amazon. And please go there and buy a six-pack of the – don't even read the things. Just buy a six pack of them. And I'm not asking you I'm not asking you to read these books, but please buy them.
Well, I love it. I love it. And I have so many questions. And our mutual friend Frank, who I gave you a little chat message there, but
oh yeah.
Asked a question which probably would take you another hour. He asked, how does someone go from reading about ritual magic to practicing ritual magic? And I think to answer that question, we're going to have you back again.
Well, I'll be happy to come back.
And we haven't even started to scratch the surface of Enochian or, will I pronounce it right, Goetic?
Yeah, that'll do.
Magic. The various different directions and different realms of knowledge that you've written about that are just absolutely fascinating. And I know, one fingernail's worth scratching the surface. Very vague idea of what those points of view and methodologies are. So I'd love to hear more.
Well, just give me a call.
I know where to find you now.
I'm a shameless self-promoter. So just
so where's your next performance? Where are you headed off to?
I'm off to New York City to play at Cafe Vivaldi in Greenwich Village. And I'm going to be appearing there along with a wonderful artist named Wendy Rule. Australian singer. And Cafe Vivaldi is my favorite place. It's kind of my home place in New York City. And That's April 23rd. And then the following Saturday, I will be in Austin, Texas at the Carousel Club with another wonderful artist. Irene Getz from France. And I say Getz is probably gay. Okay, but anyway, and all that information is on my Reverb Nation account, and of course I'm playing little places around Southern California, just because they can't keep me away. I show up and they say, "Well, let the old guy sing." So. But please, look me up on YouTube. I've got lots of YouTubes. And my latest YouTube is called I Once Was the Hero of Megiddo. M-E-G-I-D-D-O. I Once Was the Hero of Megiddo. And I got another one called You Bet Your Ass It's Class Warfare. So
I'm going to have to go look for him.
Yes, please. Please see that. And if you don't like it, click like anyway. I'll take the pity vote.
Yeah. Hey, Lon, the hour has disappeared, and we're going to have to wind things up. But I definitely want to have you back, and I totally enjoyed our connection. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Have a good night.
You too. Thank you so much. And we've just had another incredible hour that disappeared in a fraction of the time, which must be that non-dualistic experience of time standing still, but we're disappearing. But here we are. And if you're interested in my work, since I get my shameless self-promotion, you can find me at househealing.com. And on the contact page, you'll find every conceivable technology for getting in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar, so you can make an appointment for a complimentary 20-minute assessment, reading, get to know each other, find out what's going on with you, and how my work might be helpful to you. So would love to talk to you and see what I can do. My new way of looking at what I do is I'm the village shaman for the global village, and instead of bringing me a chicken, we'll use PayPal, and instead of being able to sit around a fire, we will do it with a telephone. So the next week, my guest is Lisa Campione, who's a more local. She's a Massachusetts person, and I've known her for quite some time. She's a psychic and a healer and part of a school for self-development, kind of a mini mystery school. And we will hear more about her story. So come on back next week. If you want to hear this, the recording is at www.thefarkasfiles.com. And we'll see you next week. Thank you, one and all, for being here.